Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It is the 29th day of October 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the agricultural futures markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along with a look at today's agricultural news. Amy Rochkis will be here, too. She's with the Farm Bureau and has a commentary for the afternoon. And then as we close out our half hour, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Steve Hilberg at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Of course, it's a Friday afternoon, not a Thursday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. Here are the settlement prices as they finished up for the week and the month in Chicago. Futures in the December wheat at 717 and a quarter, down a penny today. March at 757 and a quarter, down three quarters. And the May at 775, a half lower. And next year's July at 783 and three quarters, down two and a quarter. December corn up three today, 582. March at 595, up three. The May at 601, two and three quarters higher. July at 603 and three quarters, up a penny and three quarters. And the December futures for next year at 542, a penny higher. November beans, $12.26, up a penny on the day. January futures, $12.36, unchanged. The March at 1240 and a quarter, down a quarter. May beans, 1239 and three quarters, unchanged. And the July futures at 1243 and a half, up one. Next year's November, down two today at $11.73. December bean meal was up $1.40 at $3.37.70. December bean oil at $49.30, down 40 cents at $49.75. Live cattle futures, October contract, $1.85 lower at $98.85. December at $98.82 and a half, down 45 cents. November feeders at $110.32 and a half, down 62 and a half cents today. And the January at $110.80. down 37 and a half cents. December lean hogs at $66.20, down 85 cents on the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Visit us online at willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures at $81.45 a barrel, down 73 cents. Ethanol at $2.33.09, a penny and 9 cents higher today. Natural gas on the afternoon at $4.04.5, up 15.5 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.22. That finished 2 3/10 of a cent lower. That's not the finish. Last trade, though. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,106 is just about 8 points lower. Gold futures at $1,357.10 are up 15 bucks on the day. And the U.S. dollar at 77.23 on the afternoon is down 0.06 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon. They say the sky should be sunny, a high near 53 degrees, west-southwest winds around 6 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear skies, a low of 35, south-southwest winds between 6 and 9. And Saturday, it should be sunny, a high near 62, southwest winds between 10 and 18, they'll gust as high as 29. Saturday night, mostly clear skies, a low of 37, north-northwest winds between 7 and 9. And Sunday, mostly sunny, a high near 59, northeast winds between 7 and 10. By the time we get to Sunday night, it'll be mostly cloudy, a low about 40 degrees. On Monday, for the extended forecast, partly sunny, a high of 57. Monday night, partly cloudy, a low of 37. Tuesday, sunny, the high 52. Tuesday night, partly cloudy, with a low around 29 degrees. On Wednesday, should be mostly sunny, the high near 50. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 35. And on Thursday of next week, mostly sunny skies, a high near 53. A more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest and the nation comes up at the bottom of this half hour when we talk with Steve Hilberg at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Bob Baisdiffer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets with some analysis this afternoon from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Big Mike Suzzolo, good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey, Todd, how are you today?
Oh, well, you know, wheat finally let her up, baby, so let's talk about it.
You keep talking about something long enough, it'll finally happen,
well,
right?
That's the case. So let's go through just the weekly trade because, you know, we had the wheat and it kept running up a little bit during the week. And it managed to gain 46.5 cents in the nearby 47.75 in the July. That settlement price was at 783.75. And I suppose you're going to tell me that that helped December gain 22 cents in the corn, and even the 26.5 cent rise in the soybeans.
Well, I think soybeans probably did it all by themselves. Although I think that if the wheat and the corn would have gone lower, the beans wouldn't have been able to hold up as well as they have the past couple of weeks. But with another, I think, 2 weeks in a row now, we've seen 2 million metric tons of bean export sales. I think the beans were going to be held up fairly nicely because loadings at the Gulf are still just running red hot from what I'm picking up. But the wheat had a lot of help. It, you know, we talked about this on Commodity Week last week with our guest about the wheat-corn spread and wheat working into cattle rations and feeding rations and the soft red price at the Gulf being around $260 a ton. That typically brings in support. So we got good weekly export inspections Monday morning. And I think one of the biggest catalysts was the USDA data users meeting where the WAOB fellow that reports to chief economist Glauber just brought out of nowhere in his closing comments how we should be more worried about, or if it were him, we should be watching the Black Sea region and the wheat, and that area is not out of the woods. So I think that really, really helped. And then Monday afternoon, we got the 64% emergence in winter wheat. As a country, I think Kansas is only 42% good to excellent, and Indiana is only 24% good to excellent. I think those three things really helped with the previous week's close to bring about this turn in the wheat market and the ability for the wheat to get up to its major resistance now, the 725 level.
You know, I have been waiting all week for somebody to mention that Jerry Bange, who's with the World Agricultural Outlook
right.
Board, that's the WAOB,
right.
had said something about the Black Sea, and I just sort of held my tongue for the week waiting for that to come up. I'm glad you did, because we were watching the wheat move higher, and there were lots of reasons, but it sure seemed to me that out of that desert data users group, and it was pretty widely reported, that he believes that if the Black Sea can't come through next year, that we'll be in a world of hurt, I suppose.
We'll essentially have to feed their livestock for him is how I left it, I inferred his words. And it was really interesting because it was a record number at that data users meeting. And like you said, all the major newswire firms were there. And it was really something because they broke at about those 6 o'clock Eastern time, and everybody rushed out, and Steve Erdman and I went up there together, and we were walking out, and a couple of the guys we knew came up to us and said, "Did you hear what Bange said? It seemed like that was the talk of the whole meeting. It wasn't the E15. It wasn't the Chinese corn." And he even rattled that off before he made that comment. He said, "You guys are worried about the stocks report. You're worried about the E15. You're worried about the and I'm paraphrasing obviously, but you're worried about the corn supplies in China and the United States, and that's all fine, but look at Black Sea." And I think that really did set some tones in Chicago after that.
You know, he said along with that, at least I saw it, and you maybe can confirm this, was that they shut down the export of wheat out of Russia, and remember, only out of Russia, but not out of Ukraine, and so not out of the whole Black Sea, to maintain their livestock sector. And I thought that was a pretty important thought because they have a livestock sector, but they just really started to get that livestock sector back in probably the last 5 to 7 years when the Soviet Union fell apart as a bloc.
Yes.
They ate all their animals.
Yes, and this is huge from a standpoint of not just the grain side, but the livestock side, because when I was driving home, I thought, what if the Black Sea and the United States don't come out of this very well? I mean, when I drove from Merrillville back down to Lafayette, I saw more wheat than I'd ever seen in my life up in that area, and it did not look good. If you know what I look like, it looked like the top of my head. It was thin, it was white, it was sparse, it tough looking. And I thought, this is a really tough crop going into dormancy, and it could be heaving in 3 or 4 months, and all of a sudden it's going to be tilled up. And so if the Black Sea and the United States both have a bad crop, we won't be able to supply their livestock. And so then it goes back to, well, then we're going to have a huge liquidation phase, not just maybe here in the United States, but also, and I hate to use the word huge, but that, like you said, they have really built their livestock sector up immensely in the last 10 years.
Well, they've had to, because, I think the important, you know, it takes a long time, not so long to get poultry back in place, but a good-sized hog herd and, more importantly, a large dairy or a large beef cattle herd takes...
Long-term investment,
10, 15 years. I was there in 2004, and they were getting started, but we're still talking. The dairy or the beef specialist with me was talking that it would take 10 years for them to even get a good rebuild on their herd. So livestock, I think, will be really important to them. And that may be one of the reasons they just pulled the trigger and said, we're shutting the exports off.
I think that is exactly right. And I would say the wheat rally this week maybe had some hand in the hogs falling so dramatically. In fact, the hogs went down to a 200-week moving average. First time in several months that it's hit that. I'm hoping next week we have a reversal and some short covering in the hogs, because we're now down to 50 cents on a live basis, and that should keep demand very strong. But hog producers this week were very, very adamant, we can't take much more of a hit with these prices of corn and meal.
Okay, so what else is happening in the marketplace you made note of either today or on the week?
Well, I think the biggest things are next week. We're going to get the election on Tuesday. Well, first we'll have the Brazilian elections, the runoff elections on Sunday. That will probably play a lot into the dollar-real currency trade on Sunday night, Monday. Then we'll have our U.S. elections on Tuesday. Then we'll have the Federal Reserve, and try and get some information, hard information from them about what their quantitative easing, their monetary stimulus is going to be, and that's going to come out Wednesday afternoon. So next week to me seems like it's an outside market week, and then we come back the following week and come in with the USDA report on the 9th, I believe it is, and so then we'll switch back to micro fundamentals. So it's going to be a really, really volatile week. I think we got to get the Maloxone ready on the desk for next week.
Anything on the finish up of the month or the close of the month on the grains or the oil seeds or the livestock that tempted you to take a look at those charts very much?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing that I saw was the expectation that we were going to have the grains maybe see some profit taking to the downside in this week's trade. It did not happen. And I think the direct reason was because of the Federal Reserve and because of the USDA report. I think because of the early harvest, Todd, and the fact that we're about a month ahead of schedule, I think our seasonals are about a month ahead of schedules as well. So what people that were looking for an October end-of-month profit-taking, I'll be looking for that in November if we don't get good news out of these reports, and the season will be backed up another month. So I'm a little bit more concerned that we will have a hard time feeding the bull as we get closer and closer to Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Have a great weekend, sir.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon. You can hear him again, if you'd like, on our website at willag.org, or you can dial this number, 217-333-3434. We call that our mobile analyst portal. It's just voicemail, updated at 10:15 and 3:15 daily. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with all the agricultural news.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stewart-peterson.com.
In agricultural news, China has rejected a cargo of U.S. corn after finding it contained an unsanctioned genetically modified strain. Sources say the cargo was supplied by a Japanese trading house. Chinese quarantine officials declined to comment. The International Grain Council says that world grain markets are expected to tighten in the 2010-11 season, as world grain consumption outpaces supply for the first time in 4 years. Global grain production is expected to total 1.73 billion tons this season. IGC cut its September forecast by 11 million tons. Most of the fall was due to a 10 million ton drawback in corn production due to worsening prospects in the U.S. and China. World grain consumption is expected to total 1.79 billion tons, 1.5% higher than in 2009-2010. Bunge's chief executive says the company expects to benefit from tight global grain and oilseed supplies through 2011. Alberto Weisner says that crop shortfalls in the former Soviet Union and elsewhere around the world have given large grain merchandisers such as Bunge the chance to capitalize on their ability to source and ship from a wide variety of locations. Weisner says that especially soybean meal demand will continue to surge as European customers unable to source wheat for their livestock feed turn to other sources. The Commerce Department today says that gross domestic product expanded at a 2% annual rate as consumer spending rose at its quickest pace since 2006. The economy expanded at a 1.7% rate in the second quarter, and third quarter growth matched economists' expectations. Next week, analysts expect the Fed to announce bond purchases of at least $100 billion a month to push borrowing costs lower and spur businesses to expand investment and hiring. Foster Farms, the largest poultry producer in the western U.S. by revenue, has announced it is delaying expansion of a plant due to high corn costs. Dick Lobb, spokesperson for the National Chicken Council, says he is unaware of any additional planned reductions in the industry. Pilgrim's Pride has said it will reopen three idle plants. The first in Douglas, Georgia, is scheduled to start up in January, while the opening dates for the two other sites have not been finalized. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, urging you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, including Commodity Week. We'll record Commodity Week at 4:30 this afternoon. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org. It'll be posted there before it airs on any radio station by about 6 o'clock on this Friday evening.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Next, Amy Rochkis has a commentary where she says, it's time to vote.
Finances are front page news as we count down to Election Day 2010. Our state and federal governments are in perhaps the worst financial shape ever. Illinois is spending more money than it takes in, so much so that the state has more than $3 billion in unpaid bills and a total deficit of $13 billion. To make up that shortfall, every man, woman, and child in the state would have to pitch in an extra $1,007. Illinois lost 400,000 jobs in this recession, resulting in $6 billion in lost income tax revenue for the state. Since 1990, Illinois has experienced job growth of just one-third of the rate of the rest of the United States. This deficit spending and loss of tax revenue has a direct impact on agriculture. Tax dollars pay the salaries of meat and poultry inspectors so that livestock can be processed. They fund grain warehouse and inspection programs to ensure that grain is secure. Tax dollars fund programs to ensure that scales are correct, and they support applicator testing programs so that we and the vendors we hire can get licenses to apply the inputs. The picture is no brighter in Washington, D.C. According to the Congressional Budget Office, the federal deficit is $1.2 trillion. That's $3,908 in debt for every American. Federal spending on a per-person basis has increased fivefold in the past 30 years, from $2,250 in 1979 to nearly $11,500 today. There is no easy answer to these budget problems, but we have an impact on being informed on the issues and voting in the fall election. Illinois residents will elect a governor and a U.S. senator, in addition to deciding local elections and ballot issues. Tune in and get to know the issues and candidates. Decide what you want your community to look like in the next 2 to 4 years. Learn which candidates support that vision. Illinois Farm Bureau has made it easier for you by creating an online guide to candidates called the Voter's Handbook. Visit www.ilfb.org. Turn out and be sure to vote on Tuesday, November 2nd. Being involved and engaged is as important this year as ever before. This is Amy Rochkis, manager of the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochka's comments are her own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to participate. If you'd like, just give us a call at 217-333-9697. Listening to the closing market report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check the cash grain markets. On the phone line with us from the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, as their general manager. They have 10 elevators across East Central Illinois. Bruce Bostard, good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Everything's been done for a while, so imagine you're shuttering the doors and moving things around and getting things cleaned up. What happens in an elevator at this time of year?
Basically, we are checking, measuring inventory right now. We're picking up our ground pile. Only had one this year, and that should be done tomorrow. Going through the logistics and seeing what needs to be done and looking at the shipping schedules.
And do the weights and measurements folks come out and start measuring too?
We had our warehouse exam right at the first part of harvest, so the first part of September. So that's through. This is our internal measurements.
Okay. Now let's talk about the cash grain market and basis and such. How's it been for the week?
Improving out here. Decatur basis on corn has improved, and the rail markets have been showing some upticks. On the soybean basis, we've seen the higher numbers there. Export are leading the way, and that's forcing the processors to improve some numbers, even though their crush margins aren't nearly as good as what they have been for the last year or so.
Are farmers interested at all in taking advantage of what they see at your elevator?
We are having some good scale-up selling. We have offers above the market. People are just kind of picking a point. Basically it's January for something that's in the bin or looking at the new crop 11 numbers.
And they're looking at the 11. Are they pulling the trigger on them?
Yeah, we're seeing some scale-up selling out there. After this last year, I think people don't want to get overbooked or jump in too early.
So that's for corn. Are they doing the same for beans when you get to November beans next year?
Yes.
Okay. And what are your expectations for maybe the next month or so for both corn and bean basis?
I guess I'm looking at both of them to just get pretty flat so we can keep generating some cash movement out here. The export program continues to be really good on the soybeans, and that's the driving force. The corn program, I guess, is a little bit more problematic, is we're just not shipping that much export corn, although we have sales on the books, but it worries you a little bit.
And your bids for the day?
We are at 567 on nearby corn, 575 for the January. Beans, 1206 nearby, and 1217 January.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us on a Friday afternoon on the Closing Market Report. I'll be back in just 2 minutes when we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center will be here.
It's oatmeal day. Oats were the last of the major cereal grains to be domesticated around 3,000 years ago in Europe. Part of the reason why people were slow to embrace oats is because they go rancid quickly due to the presence of natural fats and a fat-dissolving enzyme that requires quick processing after harvest. On this day in agricultural history in 1872, an all-metal windmill was patented by J.S. Risdon. The all-steel windmill was unpopular at first because of expense and the perception that an all-metal windmill would be much more difficult to maintain and repair than a wood windmill. In a few years, with a large marketing effort, all-metal windmills were finally accepted, and eventually, wooden windmills were phased out. In 1929, it's Black Tuesday of the great stock market crash. About 16 million shares were traded on Black Tuesday, a record that was not eclipsed until 1968. And all the market lost $14 billion on Black Tuesday and $30 billion during a three-day trading session. That was 10 times the annual budget of the federal government. And in 1947, the first successful cloud seeding with dry ice took place at Concord, New Hampshire. Ironically, natural rainfall immediately following the seeding made it impossible to measure the artificial rainfall total. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the closing market report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason on the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for a Friday and a weekend is Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, you know, last week I asked you about the four-inch soil temperatures, and I think most producers have been waiting patiently for them to get 50 and below and to be stable there. What do you say this week?
Well, as of yesterday morning at 10 a.m., basically temperatures were 50 or below at the 4-inch level under bare soil, pretty much all north of Highway 16, Illinois 16, maybe a few parts there of Edgar County and Southern Vermilion that might have been a little bit above, but that's probably not the case today. So temperatures are down as low as 44 up in Stephenson County, and yesterday morning they were right at 50 here in Champaign-Urbana. So looks like we finally crossed the threshold.
Hey, ready, set, go, and below below 16, that's Southern Illinois, and they don't go in the fall anyway,
right.
Or they shouldn't. So good deal. There we go. And then I was looking at the lows for the week, so we're 37 and 40 and 37 and 29 and 35. So I think are they going to stay stable at that level, that 50 degrees and below for the soil temperature?
I think probably they will, because our daytime temperatures aren't going to be warming up a great deal. This next week, we'll see a little bit of a warming into the low 60s, but then back down into the 50s and overnight lows generally in the 30s. And during the daytimes, they may come up a bit. But with the cold weather generally hanging in here now, at least not extremely warm weather like we were having, I think probably they will tend to stay below 50.
Okay, so let's go back and look at the beginning of this week. It was really windy. As a climatologist, I bet you were having a lot of fun.
Yeah, this was the week for weather geeks, as is being said. It was pretty spectacular with that big storm over the over Minnesota. We had almost 24 hours of pretty steady temperatures in the 60s with the strong southwest winds ahead of the system. And, of course, we had the very strong winds behind it. We've had severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. Most of that occurred from the Illinois-Indiana state line on eastward, although we did have some damage in Champaign-Urbana and up around the Chicago area. But it was a pretty wild week, but now it's pretty typical of what it should be this time of year, and it's amazing that it goes from that swings that wide in just a matter of a couple of days.
And you think we'll get back into wild anytime soon, or does it look pretty calm?
It looks pretty calm for at least the next week or so. High pressure will tend to dominate. There's signs that a cutoff low may form over the Gulf states, but that looks like it's going to stay well south of us and really won't give us much of any kind of problem. Temperatures, like I said, will come up a little bit this weekend as we get into some southwesterly flow. So conditions for the football game here tomorrow and then for trick-or-treating on Halloween on Sunday should be really nice. And then we'll start chilling down a little bit in the early part of next week. But Other than overnight lows probably getting a little bit nippy, and daytime highs should be just at or slightly below normal for this time of year, which now is roughly from the mid to upper 50s in northern Illinois to around 60 in central Illinois and to the mid 60s in the south. So that's where we should be at the end of October.
Steve, thanks so much.
All right, Todd.
Hey, Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA. Thanks for listening today. This is the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.